Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Thursday, live at Kitchen Notes at the Omni Nashville Hotel. And it is time. We have promised it. He is here. He's ready to go. Former Titans general manager John Robinson. I think people thought that Joe was going to be like, yeah, no, we said John Robinson. We're talking about this guy that worked down at the quick
set. Some rando.
But he's here and hanging out with us. How the heck are you? It's been a minute.
I'm good, man. Appreciate you guys reaching out. Chase, you pestered me long enough, and then you finally sweetened the deal with a hundo.
Yeah.
And am I going to get that in 20s or like a crisp? I'm just kidding.
Whatever works.
He didn't bribe me, guys.
Look, you know, when we talked the other day, I mean, you were always – the thing that I always appreciated about you, and I think you knew that you had to – you're building a program. Is kind of how it was, that you were always available. And you know, you'd come on as a general manager and talk to us and kind of help us through the process. Now, would you tell everything? Of course not. I think Floyd taught you well,
yeah.
And Bill Belichick and others. But you were always available. And that, you know, that's something with what we do that's always appreciative. And so we you know, thank you for that, for
yeah,
always being
and,
that way.
And to just kind of piggyback on that, I think probably one of the things – I mean, we had – yeah, we'll get into some of it, and I'll be able to talk about some stuff and some stuff I can't talk about. But I think one of the things that I'm most proud of looking back, I mean, we won a lot of football games, mm-hmm. You know, won playoff games, all that stuff's really cool. But the impact that you can have on people. And when, you know, the fourth equipment guy stays in contact with me and checks in on me, how you doing, or the fifth trainer, because I treated those – people in the organization the same way I treated the Derrick Henrys or the Ryan Tannehills. Like, we were all there. We had our own specific roles of what we were supposed to do to try to put the program in a good spot. But I try to treat everybody the same way. And I'm appreciative that they felt that and yeah. that they would reach back out to me, you know, after I was out.
Right. Well, I'll start with a simple question. You know, we're sitting here today having this conversation. You've had a lot of time to reflect the last couple of years and everything. You know, why do you think that we're sitting here today and that you're not at training camp?
I guess probably if I could have bought some mulligans, you know, yeah. like before the golf tournament, you know, you can pay for those mulligans. I probably would have bought a handful of those. You know, I think at the end of the day, let me first lead off with I'm extremely appreciative of Amy, of Kenneth, of Barkley, of the Adams family for taking a chance on a hayseed from West Tennessee and giving me an opportunity to do what – that's not the ambulance coming for me, by the way, guys.
Not yet.
Not yet, yeah.
Why is that ambulance two-tone blue?
Like, yeah. What is that? But I'm extreme. I mean, they certainly changed my life and my family's life for the opportunity. But you know, at the end of the day, I was charged with managing decisions as it related to on the field stuff, and I didn't do my job well enough at times, and that's what happens. And again, certainly some things I would love to have back. A lot of things that I'm extremely proud of. That we were able to do in my time there, but that's the way it goes. You know, there's only one perfect man that ever walked this earth, and none yeah. of us will ever be that. But our purpose is to try to strive to be like him as much as we can.
I think one thing that's interesting to me is, and I've known this, but it was reminded of me when we announced you were coming on, and the response. From the fan base, some good, some bad, some in
sure.
the middle, but it showed me that, like, when people want to say that nobody cares about the Titans, that is false. This fan base is bought in and loves that football team.
Oh yeah.
How much did you feel that when you were there? I mean, how much have you felt it now of whether fairly or unfairly you get blamed for certain things when you kind of see the reaction of the fan base to this team?
Yeah, I think Titans fans are extremely passionate about their football team, right? When the team moved here in the late 90s and rolled right out of the gate, you know, and Mike Keith's calling plays, and you can see it and you can feel it in the stadium. You can see it and feel it in the away stadiums. I'll never forget when we played Green Bay here. I think it was 2017, and it was packed full of Packers fans. And the loyal Titans fans have stuck around after we took them to the woodshed, you know. And I think the Packers fans walked back across the pedestrian bridge and drank every single beer in Broadway. I think literally Broadway ran out of beer about mid-third quarter. And the fans that stayed there and were, like, just amped up in the fourth quarter when it was over and we were walking off, like, that's how you know. Or when you're playing on the road in Jacksonville or Houston or Indy or wherever – and you look up in the fans and you see the two-tone blue crew up there, and they're loyal, you know. So I think that's the NFL in general. Mm-hmm. That's with every team. But when you work for the team, like when I worked for the Titans, it was really special to see, you know, the two-tone blue in the stadium, wherever we played, there to support us.
John, in the spring, you had a great 21 season, go, you know, the number one seed. I know it hurts losing the Bengals. You go to the 22 season. You get word that A.J. Brown is going to ask for a new contract.
Here we go, Joe.
Right out of the gate. Sorry. Well, you do. How did that start, and then the negotiation? And then once that happened, did you have to run it up the flagpole and say, look, we our receiver wants an extension. What do we do here?
I brought gauze and Band-Aids, so if you cut me off, I'll mend up. No, that's a topic everybody probably is tuning in to hear about. And I would love to give in the details. I can't go into the details on it, but there was just a lot of discussion that went into that decision. Ultimately, it was my responsibility to make the decision, you know, and again, if I had one of those mulligans, I would probably do that. And that's nothing against Traylon or anybody else, but I think, AJ's went on to have a great run. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of where he's at, mm-hmm. and what he's been able to accomplish. But sure, I mean, in hindsight, if you had a do-over, I mean, I'd be an idiot to sit here and say, no, I'd do it again. Like, no, you'd do it different. But we made the decision that we made, and then, you know, the rest is what it is.
When you say, if you can't talk about it, I understand it. When you say we, who is we?
Well, anytime you make a decision, right, it's collectively as an organization, there's a lot of people involved, right? It's not like it's like when the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, when they call a play on Sunday, it's not like they're shooting from the hip and they're like, I'm just going to run this play, even though you haven't practiced it, you haven't talked about it, you haven't watched it on film. Like, you go through every scenario with the organization, and – it's the same thing in roster building. It's like you're going through, you know, your free agency stuff. You're going through trade proposals. You're going through draft prep, and you talk internally and you meet and, you know, you come up with scenarios. All right, we can do A, we can do B, we can do C, and as a team. And I think I said this at the press conference after, you know, we made the move. It's like we collectively made a decision to do this, and that's what we did.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the worst things on draft night is the camera inside the office. I don't know why that's approved. I'd never have that happen.
Content, Joe. Everything's content, baby.
Obviously, we saw the reaction that Mike Vrabel had. How much discussion did you have with Mike about what was going down? How much headway did Mike know that was happening draft night? Because his reaction, John, was really telling.
Yeah, again, I would just say we collectively – we made the decision that we made, and that's a group decision.
Group decision. And don't hate me for these, because I got to ask.
You know what I thought about doing? We should have staged, like, I don't know that I'm on camera, though.
You are.
Oh, okay. I could have been Jesse Ventura and just like WWF and got up and slammed my headphones and tried to body slam Chase McCabe.
Oh, God, it would be the
greatest
thing.
That would actually be great.
And again, if you can't talk about it, I understand it, but we got to ask. That Sunday in Philadelphia when AJ had the big day and everything, you were let go 2 days later.
Yep.
Did you have any warning, John? Did you have any idea that was happening? because we didn't.
No, I don't think anybody does. Like, you know, it is what it is. And again, I can't say enough of how grateful I am for Amy and the opportunity she gave me. And I know that was probably a hard decision for her. And I respect her for the decision that she made. It was a bold decision, and she made it. And I'm extremely grateful and proud of everything that she did for me and my family and my time here. You know, we had a great relationship, and they made a collective decision to go a different direction, and that's the decision they made.
Do you think, you know, when I listen to you say that, and, you know, obviously I've been critical of decisions she's made. I was critical of decisions you made sometimes. I praise the, you know, the ones I agree with and all of that. That's part of the job. Do you think people realize how much she truly cares about that franchise and that team and now this city? Because I do think she does. I mean, she wouldn't be
doing
this.
There's no doubt.
Right.
She loves the team. I mean, it's been in her family for forever, right? Yeah. And there's nothing more than, and I'm not trying to speak for her, it's just I think that she wants to bring a championship to this city and to this state. And she cares about it. She really, really cares about it. And I certainly felt that in my time there. And I was extremely appreciative of her passion to chase greatness.
I don't want to go through the whole evaluation process of what you saw in Traylon and all of that. I mean, obviously you thought he was going to be good. Should injuries be held?
Well, when you take them, Chase, you don't think they're not going to be good.
Right. 100%. Yeah. I mean, you knew.
Yeah, let's take this guy. I think he's going to stand.
But, like, should injuries, they're a part of the game. It's a violent sport.
It is.
Unfortunately, he has battled that
since
he walked through the door.
Yep.
Should that be held against him and make him labeled a bust? Because I don't – sometimes you can't control that.
Yeah, that's a great question. You can't control injuries. That's the one thing. There's two things in professional football that, from a player standpoint, that absolutely suck, and that's losing and getting hurt. And you can count on both of those are going to happen if you play in the NFL. You're going to lose at some point, and you're probably going to get hurt. And it's just unfortunate for Traylon because he's a great guy. Yeah. He works extremely hard, or he worked extremely hard, you know, leading up when we drafted him. You know, I texted him the other day after he got let go and said, hey, I still believe in you. God's got you. Keep grinding. And because that's hard, right? You know, and those were some of the things that those were the worst times of my job.
Yeah.
Was when you had to move on from certain players and you have to have that discussion with them. So I wish him nothing but the best, but you're right. Injuries, you can't predict them.
Sure.
You know, we took Jeffrey and he had just had a knee injury, and Jeffrey's gone on to be pretty dang good football player. And you don't have a crystal ball to know kind of where that's going to land. And it's certainly unfortunate for him that it just seems to be, has been a reoccurring thing so far in his career.
We'll revisit that because there's still a lot more about that I want to ask. Don't hate me again, John. I got to ask.
You're like the you're wielding. You're the. Did y'all draw straws? Or no, wield the knife.
I tell you, look.
What's the old ABC reporter Sam Donaldson who just you know what? The game. You come back from Philadelphia. Did you get called to the office to be let go? Did you get a text? You're like, oh, did you have any idea this was happening? Because you guys were in first place.
I just answered that, Joe.
I know. You guys were in first place. I mean, we were like, what is this happening? I just don't know, like, when that Tuesday, were you like, were you lost? Were you in a fog? I've never been fired. Like, so I don't know. And we were all like, what the hell's going on?
Well, that's kind of what I thought, but, you know, the decision was made. So I was in my office, and I had the talk, and I said my goodbyes to certain people, and then I went home.
And
I didn't go to Cracker Barrel or Waffle House.
Right. And you go home. Were you your reaction? I mean, because, again, you guys were in first place. You had just been the number one seed in 21. There was a lot of – again, I texted Chase the day it happened. I'm like, what the hell's happening here?
Oh, I was on the air.
Thoughts we had. I can only imagine what thoughts you had when that Wednesday rolls around and you're not at St. Thomas Sports Park.
Yeah, I don't really remember what I did. I mean, I probably watched the Today Show or news or something. I think you're still in a fog. You know, it's.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. I try to put myself in the player's shoes. You know, when they've practiced and gone through all the stuff, and then you tell them you can't play for this team anymore, and then it's like, all right, well, what's next? You know, what do you do next? And at kind of where my head was at was like, what's going to be next? And I think the first thing that I wanted to do was kind of recenter myself with my family, because all of those jobs, you know, head coach position, I mean, all of the NFL is a very demanding league, and your family sacrifices. There's a lot of benefits. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of blessings. There's financial blessings. There's notoriety. There's all that. But I can't tell you how many lacrosse games I missed, how many soccer games I missed, how many. And even though I would tell, you know, my staff, like, if you miss something that your kid's supposed to perform at, especially in the spring, right, then I'm going to be upset. And I was saying one thing, but I was doing something different, right? And my girls just kind of chalked it up. Well, that's part of the game. You know, that's something. So I wasn't as present as I should have been. And then when you start to, when you have success, which we did, you know, we were winning, then the pressure starts. And it's a lot of internal pressure, you know, that I put on myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joe, you and I were catching up before about, you know, mental health. I wouldn't say I was in a mental health crisis, but like there was a lot of stuff that I started to bring home work-wise that kept my head spinning, and I wasn't present even when I was home.
Right.
And that wasn't good. And I credit my wife for, you know, loving me unconditionally and being there for me, supportive, and really helping me transition after it went down to get back to some degree of normalcy, you know. Not that anything's normal in this world, you know.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, Bob Odenkirk, the actor, was asked recently, are you jealous of anybody? And he said, I'm jealous of those who still have kids at home. And I was like, man, that's powerful. And it's what you're talking about. When I would miss my son's event for work, I was devastated. I can only imagine in your position with you two girls missing that, you don't get it back, John, and you know this.
Yeah, I mean, when we moved here in 16, I think my oldest, she was in elementary school, like fourth, fifth grade, somewhere in there, and then like I blink and she's graduating, and it's just like, whoa,
yeah,
where'd it go? Like I wasn't there for a lot of it, you know. And again, that's a credit to my wife for, you know. She wasn't a single parent, but a lot of times she probably felt like she was a single parent because she was doing everything. And I would be frustrated at things when I came home around the house that weren't done, and I had neglected to think that she had ran this kid to dance at 6 o'clock and then went back and picked her up at 8:30. Meanwhile, having my other one do something that it's a constant mom shuttle. Right. There's a lot of moms in this city that just they're shuttling kids.
Right.
And they deal with a lot of stuff every single day. And I didn't really help with much of that. You know, I took care of all the financials, but like they're doing all of the basically raising the kids. So, yeah, I feel like I think it was, you know, it's unfortunate that you know, you brought up earlier that I'm not at a training camp right now. And I've had a couple opportunities to interview since then, and I think it's really it's really more of a God thing, because I am extremely, when I'm doing something, I'm doing something, and I know that if I get back in, like I know how I'm gonna do it. There's a lot of things I'll do the same, and there's some things I'll do different. But there's gonna be something I got to give up with that, and I don't think he was ready for me to, kind of leave my family again, you know. So,
former Titans GM John Robinson is with us. We will have more unless he runs out during the break. I don't know if we've run him off yet or not.
Slams me.
Doors open.
We will have more with John Robinson coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes, our show presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. Continuing our conversation with former Titans general manager John Robinson, who has been nice enough to come and hang out with us and answer some questions, which I think so far so good.
I'm only bleeding a little bit. I just got nicked. It hadn't been a deep cut, you know. I think I've avoided.
You haven't left yet, so that's good.
I haven't left yet at all.
Joe just went to the kitchen and he got a bigger knife.
Had to come back. We have a million questions. I'll ask you something real quick. Why did you trade for Tannehill in 19? What did I? Because I tell Chase often. I remember the Patriots joint practice here, and Brady just carved you guys up. I mean, and I remember Mariota's first pass was airmailed, almost went to the lake, and you and Vrabel were talking. I don't know what you're talking about. And then Tannehill goes in, and he carves up the Patriots secondary, and I'm like, that's the quarterback. What did you see in Tannehill in 19? Because that's the second best quarterback that's ever been in the city. What did you see in him?
I liked what he didn't win a ton in Miami, but I liked that he was mobile. He had a good arm. From what I remember, he was extremely intelligent. He looked like he made good decisions with the football. And we were just trying to progressively improve the backup position because the previous 2 years we had Castle, who I love Cass, and Cass was great for Marcus. And then we went with Blaine Gabbert. And then Tannehill, you know, that kind of situation came up, and I thought, well, here's a guy that started a lot of games and he's won games, and you know, Marcus has had some injuries, you mm-hmm. know, particularly towards the end of the season, and having somebody that can go in there where we felt like we had a chance to continue to run until Marcus got back healthy. That was at least the initial intent. And then, you know, the move was made and then Ryan took over and, you know, he did the rest. But it was a credit to Tannehill because, you know, when you're a starter for a team and then, you know, you're going to this, you know, quote-unquote backup role, you got to be accepting of that. So, you know, I credit Ryan for being very mentally in a good spot to accept that role mm-hmm. potentially at that point in his career. And then whatever happens, you know. So – at the end of the day, it worked out for both parties. He was a great teammate. He was a great quarterback for us while he was here. And I know he's a great father and dad. I still see him some. Our kids go to the same school, so he's doing good.
Is that a prime example? Because you've seen it. Like Sam Darnold, for instance, is an example of a guy that clearly needed a fresh start, got a couple, was with the right coach, the right offense. Art Smith and Ryan seem to really have a good connection.
Yep.
That it's just you're taking a flyer on a guy, but he's in the right situation and gets that reset. Why do we see that so much? I mean, is that just because it's truly like a guy may just be in the wrong system that just doesn't work for him, or is it more than that?
I mean, I think Baker Mayfield's another example down in Tampa. I mean, I think there's so much about the quarterback position that – you know, some guys coming from college to the NFL are maybe a little more ready than others. That's no different than any other position. But for the quarterback position specifically, you're going to be the face of the team probably. And there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah.
From a, you know, just perception standpoint. But the most important thing is what you do on the field, right? And how can you motion and shift the offense to try to give yourself a tell of what the defense is going to do? Tom was the best at that, I thought. He would change his cadence. He would motion a guy across. And all he needed was a linebacker or a safety to flinch one way or the other when he went. And he knew exactly what the defense was going to do. He would get everybody on the same page, get us in the right play in New England, and he would run it, and then he was a ninja. Like, he would friggin' slice you up. So I think when you're making that transition as a young quarterback coming from college, knowing all of those tricks of the trade of how to get answers to the test before the ball is snapped, get the offense in the right play, and then when the ball is snapped, see how it unfolds, feel where the pressure is coming from, not panic, be able to find the guy who's open and deliver an accurate pass.
Whew.
It's easy for me to say, but you've got violent 300-pound dudes coming to break you in half, and you've really got about 2.5 seconds once the ball is snapped to do all that. And, like, that's a lot of pressure on, you know, a 20, 21-year-old guy who's taking his first snaps in the league. So I think in Baker's case and in Sam's case, they've had more time on task, right? Now they're a little more comfortable with the pre-snap ID, with getting the, you know, guys in the, getting the guys on the same page, with anticipating pressure, knowing if I've got to move here or slide there to get myself in position to do my job. So I think time on task with those guys that you mentioned, Sam and Baker particularly, has certainly bode well for them in their careers.
I love offensive linemen in 18 and 19.
No.
I watched Isaiah Wilson at Georgia. I would have picked him in 2020. At what moment, John, did you think to yourself and maybe to Vrabel, like, we got a problem here with Isaiah Wilson? Did Sam Pittman lie to you? I don't say that as a joke because
he wants to fight Sam Pittman.
What the hell happened? And when did you realize we got a problem with Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah, Joe, again, you're wielding the knife again. I won't get into all the details on that one. Just say that that was a COVID year, right? Yeah. And I think that it got shut down on us in mid-March.
Right.
And it's not an excuse. At the end of the day, it's my job to pick the right guy. And we weren't able to kind of do our full process. And to liken it to a T-ball game, like I don't even know if I hit the tee. You know, sometimes there's a T-ball game, the kids will swing and they'll hit the tee and then the ball falls down. I don't even think I hit the tee on that one. So,
but he was great at Georgia. I watched him. I was like, I would have picked him. I think it was a great pick. What happened afterwards, that's why I would have never do your job. I'm not doing that. Can't.
Yeah,
is that one that keeps you up? Like, what
that
hell?
There was a lot. There was stuff with that one that, again, that I can't get into details on, but yeah, it was, how do I frame this? I guess they have those dating apps now where they have a picture of somebody and you click on it. Yeah. I've never been on one. I wouldn't know how to go on one. I don't want to go on one. I love my wife. And it's like I picked the dating app and I thought this was showing up and
the person didn't match the picture.
It
was kind of weird.
Yes.
The wrong person showed up.
Right.
I'm not saying you still talk to him, but is it one of those?
No.
You just talked to him. Is it one of those, like, if he would have been? Because, I tell people, like, that was a pick. He was fantastic at Georgia. He was great at Georgia.
There's a lot of guys like that, you know, just for whatever reason, like, it just doesn't work out. And, like, that one, to your point, Joe, I mean, obviously we picked him. We thought it was going to, you know, kind of be a good match for us and ended up not.
Let me ask you this. When I look at, and there are thousands of examples in the history of the NFL of a guy that you think is a sure thing and he's not, for whatever reason, whether it's ability, injury, doesn't love the game, does the league, and I go to a specific point of like realizing how hard it is to make that transition from being the guy in college and doing no wrong and being told how great you are to go into the NFL where you're going to get your ass kicked, you know, each Sunday. Does the league do a good enough job? Is there something more they can do to truly prepare these guys? We're talking about mental health for what being in the NFL is like.
I mean, there's a ton of programs,
sure,
that they have out there. I mean, Kirby said it, I think, a couple weeks ago at the SEC things. Like, I don't know how much guys want to be coached hard anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like, I mean, when I came up in my position coaching college, he threatened the whole D-line one time that he was going to take our scholarships, our beds. We were going to have to live in a tent. And I'm like.
And he was serious.
He was, yeah. I was like, all right, well, I guess we better pick it up here, guys.
Right.
I don't think you can do that now, you know. It's changed. The game changed. Even, like, when I got here, and it certainly changed from when I started with the Patriots back in 01 or 02, whatever year that was. It even changed from 16 to, you know, my last couple of years in Tennessee. It was just – players were a little different. It was just different. And I think you can have, Chase, as many programs in place as you want. The hardest thing, I think, to measure as a scout and as an evaluator is, can they mentally handle what's going to be put on them from a football knowledge standpoint? Can they mentally go do their job? When all the bullets are flying, can they go execute what you're going to ask them to do? And do they have the heart and the grit and the determination that when it gets hard, that they'll push through it and not cave? Like that, the mental you can figure out a little bit more because you can put them through some exercises, but the heart is you can't measure that. You know, there's really. You can try to find it. We always try to find examples throughout their career of, you know, things they've overcome or what's the hardest thing you've ever gone through. But until you're in the pro game, like,
you don't really know. Yesterday, I walked into the Kevin Byard Strength and Conditioning Center
KB.
At MTSU. There has been some bad moments as a GM. There's some really good moments. You took Kevin Byard, I think, in the third round.
Yep.
He did not go to a combine. He had a pro day over at TSU. When you hit on something like that, and he's a good dude off the field.
Great guy.
That's got to be so rewarding because he's a hell of a player, and he's just everything. He's earned everything. What did you see in Byard that nobody else saw?
Well, the first thing is, like, you don't stumble into 19 interceptions. Like, he had an insane amount of production taking the football away. And, you know, I think for the safety position, you've got guys like, you know, Ronnie Lott, who was like a big hitter, right? And then you've got other guys who just get the guy on the ground so you can line up and play again. I don't think KB was a big hitter, but he got the guy on the ground most of the time so that we could line up and play defense. He did the same thing in middle. And, like, he was extremely cerebral. Like, we went and met with him, and, like, he took us through – I think they played Alabama. And – we put the tape on, and he rolled through every single call and every single check on every single play. So you could see the safety position is a lot like the quarterback position. I went through that a while ago about everything they've got to see. If the safety position, if they can see and understand and digest what the other 10 dudes in front of them are doing, and then they make everybody right. Right? It's like the quarterback. It's like the receiver might not be exactly where he's supposed to be, but I'm going to put the ball where I know he can make a play. Mm-hmm. The safety position is similar, like where you know how everything is supposed to fit, where everything's supposed to fit, and if somebody's out of position in a spot, I can make up for it and help the defense by making a play. And KB was very cerebral that way and just how he understood the game, not from a his job standpoint, but really from a peripheral and almost a 30,000-foot view standpoint, where it slows down for you. And then you can just play, you know, because you know. He was really – I was super – and they had their first child, and he texted me. I don't know how long he had been born. Or he called me. It was in the, like 9:30 at night. He goes, hey, J-Rob, I just had my first child. And I was like
– nice.
I was like – that's really cool. That's really cool. And his kids go to FRA, where my kids go. And
great school.
Yeah, he's a
proud alum right here.
There you go. So he's a good one. He's a good one. Really fortunate to get
him. That's good. I like that.
We will have more with John Robinson coming up next, if that's cool.
Yeah, I got time.
Yeah, cool. We will do more with J-Rob. Coming up next here on Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes, continuing our conversation with former Titans general manager John Robinson.
Does somebody have a key for these handcuffs to let me out
No, we don't. You got to be Houdini to get all that that goes on.
Tommy on Twitter asks if we can make you a regular. I don't know if you'd want to do that or not. But
well, at least, Tommy, I'm somewhat entertaining. I mean, yeah. I got that going for me, I guess.
We've enjoyed this. There's one thing. And look, there were a lot of good. People don't always remember that for some reason, but – there's a guy playing in Baltimore right now that's going to have a gold jacket on one day that you guys drafted in Derrick Henry. We mentioned KB, Jack Conklin, who you know I thought was a tremendous pick. Jeffrey Simmons, who's still with the Titans.
Traded for DeMarco Murray right out of the gate.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray. My favorite, Floyd's, I think, the move he loved the most is when you traded Doriel Green Beckham for
Dennis Kelly.
For Dennis Kelly. I mean, and how important Dennis Kelly was. So
Everybody wanted to put a concrete – because I think Doriel was the leading receiver the year before for the Titans.
You may be right.
And I think everybody wanted a cinder block on my foot and me at the bottom of the Cumberland. Ended up working out for us.
Oh, that's good. We talk about the other ones. We had to bring up Farley in 21.
Yep.
Hell of a play at Virginia Tech. Had the back injury. What went wrong there?
Yeah, again, I think it's another unfortunate – it's – I don't want to say it's the same as Traylon, but, like, he had a knee injury, you know, and then I was gone, and then the unfortunate thing happened with, you know, his father and the home explosion. And I think – like, fans are fans, and I love them. But when you're a player in the NFL or you're a coach in the NFL, like, it's not like it's – Madden and those guys are just figures on a screen.
Right.
They have lives too. So I think, you know, the injury stuff and then I can't even imagine dealing with losing your – I mean, I lost my dad two or three months ago. But losing him like that is just – that has a effect on you mentally. And then the grind, because he had an injury. He had a knee injury in college, if my memory's right, and then he had the back injury – then he had another injury. So I think the injury thing kind of got him. But you know, he's a player that we thought that had this supreme talent that had slipped some. And we were going to be able to get and what was projected at one time to be a top 10 player, kind of like Jeffrey, and at a discounted rate in the 20s, I think, is where we were picking. And at the end of the day, it ended up, you know, sometimes it works on those guys, sometimes it doesn't. And unfortunately, in Caleb's situation with us, when I was with the Titans, it didn't work.
Hitting on one of the, obviously, the successes, I don't think everybody knew Derrick Henry was a good running back coming out of Alabama. You guys had DeMarco Murray. He was going to come in and essentially be that number two guy. Like, could you wrap your head around the fact that he became what he became in this freak of nature, and like even at his age now, look at what he did in Baltimore last year, that it went to that point of this guy's different. Like you can, you know, you hear that phrase all the time. I think Derek truly is just built different, and that's why his career has been able to go the way that it has.
Yeah, and he's unlike a lot of runners, right? Because most runners are They're shorter in stature, right? They can be bigger. I mean, Jerome Bettis was a big guy.
Yeah. He's built like a D lineman.
But he was shorter. I mean, Derek was tall, and he was he's got longer legs. So he's got to build up a little bit. And you know, credit to the coaching staff. We were running some gap scheme stuff, and then we started running more zone stuff with Derek, and it really suited him well where we could kind of get him going. And then his great vision, he could find the lane on the backside and bend it back. And then for a guy his size, you wouldn't expect him to be able to outrun people who are smaller than him and supposedly faster than him. But like once it gets rolling, like, you can't catch him. And if you do, he's going to stiff arm you and plant you into the dirt. And I think it's a testament to mainly to Derek, right? God gave him a special set of gifts, and he works extremely hard. He loves football. He's a great teammate. And I wish him nothing but the best. And you know, if he does get in Canton, hopefully I get an invite to sit in section 300 at the stadium.
I don't know if you do this. I know as a fan, I do the what if game of, you know, the game against the Bengals. He came back from the injury, but he clearly wasn't 100%. Like he you know was not the Derek that we ended up seeing the next year. Do you ever think like if he's full bore, you guys win that game running away?
I mean, you don't know. Like, I mean, you could play revisionist history if everything with everything, you know. And you know, had that happened, had this happened, sure. There's a lot of things that could be different. Had I not had the Patriots not taken a chance on me as a linebackers coach at Nicholls State, I would have never probably ascended to where I got to. I mean, everything happens for a reason. It's in God's plan, and he's made his mark on this league, that's for sure.
Would you like to – do you talk to Rand Carthon?
We texted when he first got here, but I never really knew Rand. We didn't really kind of – I think he was more on the pro side than the college side. So I don't really know him.
Would you like to – sit down with him now? He's not coming in the side door. Hey, John, I'm here today. But would you like the opportunity just to sit down? I'm not compare notes, but just maybe compare notes.
Yeah. Again, I don't know. Like, what are we gonna do? I mean, we can sit there and chop it up. If he wanted to talk, like that's fine. Like all I know, he's a great guy. You know, it's it didn't work out for him, and I wish him nothing but the best on his future. But if I can help him, you know, I try to do that now. I'm consulting with a sports agency group, and, you know, usually in December, you know, we rep several executives and coaches, and I try to just talk through what I did and, you know, things on the interview process. We had a seminar this summer, and I told them, you know, all of them, there's probably 50 there, and I said, I get joy now out of giving back to the game. The game was great to me and my family. I get so much joy out of giving back to you guys to help you in your career. And some of it's young executives, it's young coaches. I say that like I'll be 50 next year. It's hard to believe. But seeing those guys succeed, I do the same thing with draft prospects, the ones that choose our agency group. I put those guys through what the combine is going to be like, what 30 visits is going to be like. I watch film with them. So that when they walk into a room, whether it's at a team's facility or it's at the combine, for them to feel comfortable, for them to feel confident, be themselves, but be able to answer every question that the teams are going to ask them. And I get so much joy out of when I get a text from, you know, Brock Bowers that says, I just crushed that interview. Thank you so much.
That's
or
good.
Whoever. It's like, thank you so much for going through that for me. That was awesome. Like, I felt like I nailed it. That makes me feel good because now I'm giving back to the game. I'm giving back to the game for somebody to kind of hopefully springboard their career.
One thing that I wanted to ask, I mean, now that, you know, you talked about that a little bit of what you're doing now and everything, you have had some interviews for GM jobs. Do you think that if it's the right fit, that's what you want to do? Do you want to do some media stuff? You did Good Morning Football with the NFL Network and did a great job. I mean, what do you think is next for you?
I asked for the camera at Good Morning Football that, like, takes weight off.
Does it exist? Let us know.
You know, I don't know, Chase. That's a great question. I think I interviewed with New York and Jacksonville this past cycle. I think if the right situation, you know, comes along and that's what the good Lord feels and leads me to do, then I would do that. And if it's the media thing, you know, is it the podcast? I feel like everybody's got a podcast now. I think I may try to dabble in that and have some GMs on and just let people get to know them as people. 'Cause I think that's important. You know, everybody's fantasy football is huge now, right? Everybody has their fantasy football team, and I'm the GM of my fantasy football, and social media has created this own monster where everybody thinks that they can just go be a GM somewhere. There's a lot of stuff that come. I used to say all the time, I generally manage a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I do. So have those guys kind of tell their story of where they came from, where they got to, and just have fans kind of get to know them as dudes away from the chair that they sit in. So I don't know. You know, we'll kind of see where it goes. And I'm appreciative that I'm still around the game. Game's been a part of my life for a long time, and to still be around that, you know, and somewhat of an evaluation piece with the agency group and the giving back piece with the, you know, advisory stuff for coaches and players, and then, you know, some storytelling stuff on podcasts, that'd be pretty cool.
I'm sorry, Chase. When you look back at your time in Tennessee, what was your favorite moment? I tell you, that Ravens playoff victory and the Patriots, pretty damn special.
How about that night in Kansas City with Big Joe?
I think probably those two games. I think, you know, the Raven one was special in its own way because, you know, we weren't supposed to beat those guys, you know,
right,
from all of the experts, and it was loud. Now, I mean, I was in the press box and I could hear it, and for us to do it the way we did it and, you know, pull that one off was really cool. But the coolest for me probably was the week before in New England, given that I had started my career there and the fact that we had added Logan Ryan, who, you know, I was in New England when we drafted Logan. I really liked Logan, and I thought Logan would help us, and we brought him here, and he did.
Yeah.
And Logan was a great player for us in Tennessee. And for him to kind of end the reign of 12 there in New England with that pick, that was a really, really – probably the most special for me.
What was so entertaining about that is Vrabel out-Belichicking Belichick.
Yeah, with the false starts by Wesley Woodyard. That was pretty slick. Drain the clock. We were trying to milk that baby down.
Yes.
Don't give it back to Tom too quick because he's done it before.
You said earlier, as we wrap this up, and thank you again for doing this.
I did a whole hour.
You did.
Right.
You did.
Didn't move.
You did more than you had agreed to. We appreciate that. Really?
Somebody hung up on us.
Yeah.
Not me.
You said earlier that if you got another chance, you do some things the same and some things differently. Can you really answer that question now, or is it truly based on the position, the job that you walk, the place that you walk into to truly know what you would need to do differently?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chase, and I think it's the latter. I think you really have to know. You know, you got to know the building, you got to know the feel, you got to know how things are operating, you got to know the systems, and you want to slowly implement your systems. You don't want to just come in here and just like, you know, we're going to scrap everything, we're going to do it my way. You're trying to create buy-in. You know, this word culture gets thrown around all the time. It's like culture, culture, culture. Well, I don't think you can really start a culture by just like scrapping everything. You've got to look, you got to evaluate, you got to assess of what pieces do we have on the team, in the building, with the staff. Like who do you think can do it the way that you think your vision is for what you want it to look like? And there's a lot of people in the building, whatever building you go to, that will get on board with you and do it the way that you think it should look like. So I don't think you can just say, well, I would do this and I would do this and I would do that. I think you got to give time to assess the whole situation holistically.
John, thanks so much for doing this, man. That was D-Mace, by the way, apparently, that tried to hang up on us. So thanks, Derek. Appreciate that. But, again, thank you for your time.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
We've always enjoyed the relationship and getting to know you. And, obviously, Floyd, I think, helped a lot of that.
Floyd was a man.
We miss Floyd.
Well, I always say this. I was in TV, you were the GM. We always talked about high school football. So I love the fact that you thought high school football in Middle Tennessee was important. In fact, I think your first event you did was with me in Murfreesboro at a high school football event.
Yeah.
You had just gotten to town. So thank you for your love for high school. Chase and I love high school football. It wasn't just lip service with you. You love high school football in Middle Tennessee. So thank you for that.
Purest form of the sport.
Absolutely.
High school football, and it's really the starting point for a lot of careers, whether you're playing or coaching or whatever it may be.
Well, we hope we can do this down the road. This is awesome.
We'll see. We'll see, Chase. We'll see.
Text when Joe's not here.
What did Vrabel say when we said that one time? I don't think he had it ready.
Probably not.
There you go. Very
that's
Vrabel.
Great.
John, thanks so much.
Enjoyed hanging with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That is going to do it for us. We turn things over to DVD next.
Yeah, as we leave every show, our mental health message all the time to our guys out there. If you are struggling, know on your cell phone, you can call or text 988. Somebody's always there for you. We always ask, John was talking about this earlier, mental health is so important to everybody. So please talk to someone. It'll change everything. Know that we love you. More importantly, more than anything else in this world, God loves you.
Amen to that. Peace, love, rock and roll. DVD next, 102.5 The Game.